This is a News Laundry podcast, and you're listening to Reporters Without Orders.
Order, order. Hello and welcome to Reporters Without Orders, a podcast where we talk about what made news, what didn't, and some things that absolutely shouldn't have. I'm your host, Snigdha, and today is a very special episode of Reporters Without Orders because we have two journalists from the Northeast with us. And since we've seen a section of mainstream media conveniently ignore the region, especially in the middle of a pandemic, we thought it's very important to know what's going on there. So to enlighten us today, we have Meghpi Sitlow, who is an independent journalist based out of Guwahati, Assam, and she covers the Northeast region for national and international publications. And we also have Rikinti Marvin. She is the editor of Highland Post, a newspaper that is published out of Shillong in Meghalaya. Thank you so much, ladies, for joining us today. How have you been doing?
Hi. It's a pleasure to join. I've been okay, just about managing.
Okay. And Ri, how are you doing?
I'm good, Sigda.
All right. So before we begin the podcast, I want to tell all the new listeners about News Laundry. We are 100% ad-free news platform, and we need your support to stay afloat. So please subscribe to us and pay to keep news free. You can go to the website www.newslaundry.com and click on the subscribe button on the top right corner of the website. Thank you. So, shall we begin with some bizarre news stories?
Sure, but I think how do you even rank them? Like, that's my question. Because like it's really like one bizarro after another, you know, as you go along.
So maybe take the most bizarre one first.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I honestly think so. A lot of my like sort of attention has been around what's happening, like, you know, what's dominating like the news headlines nationally. So I guess like, you know, it wasn't as if it wasn't bad enough that the migrant crisis is going on. And, you know, I especially have been following like Barkha's reports a lot. And, you know, the fact that she's been going and taking all these highways and, you know, speaking. Right. Migrants walking back home, like children carrying like these, you know, heavy loads and stuff. I mean, that is really heart-wrenching enough. And, you know, the things that happen, one is, of course, the railway patri accident, right? I mean, that's just bizarre. Yeah. Like, to me, it was really, really bizarre and like just like surreal at that level. And the two gas leaks in the middle of the pandemic, right? And perhaps if I had to add, to me the more bizarre thing, I actually really thought that, you know, these two gas leaks would get at least a week's attention in the news cycle. It disappeared in like 2 days.
True. Yeah. We're not hearing anything about it now. And people also have forgotten. Nobody's asking also. I think.
Yeah, I mean, barring a few, like I'm checking like Newsmail, some of these regional publications, Express has been put out today, you know, on the FIR that was lodged, which is like bizarre enough. They're calling it like this smoke, you know.
Yeah, but the factory owners, they got a clean chit, huh?
Exactly.
From the government,
What gets more bizarre than that? You would think that maybe with all our history with Bhopal and other cases, you know, this would just be dealt with differently. But it seems as if the pandemic, you know, within that curtain, rather, I think everything can be sort of brushed under the rug.
That's true.
Yeah, to me, that was probably the most bizarre, I suppose.
All right. And what about you, Ri?
For us, locally, I mean, in Meghalaya, you know, I'll be talking about that later.
Yeah,
we've never had official letters coming from the government on the patients. All right. So what we do is we follow tweets, we follow Facebook. So you know, the people there, whenever the government goes live on Facebook and talk to people, we see bizarre comments, you know, like, I mean, the chief minister is announcing about a COVID patient. Then you can see some people there commenting like, can you be my sugar daddy? And you have, you know, and then you see one person commenting like, we are so happy that they are safe, but you know, they should stay positive.
Oh my God.
these are the kinds of, you know, comments that you get on social media, and it's bizarre.
Actually, it is. Yeah, there was a press conference that happened like yesterday or something. Mm-hmm. This is the health minister of Assam, Himanta Biswa Sarma, also doing, he does his press conferences quite regularly.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's very entertaining, I think, like, you know, while you're listening. I mean, you know, I think suffice to say what the government also provides in terms of information is really BS enough. So, I mean, just to distract yourself from, like, you know, the actual BS, you should follow whatever goes on in the chat section, you know, on YouTube, yes, and things like that. And it's hilarious, you know, like
it is
like people are like marrowing lines and stuff, like, you know, like the guy was asking,
yeah,
the girl that, you know, oh, are you female, can we be friends or something like that, you
know? Oh god, yeah, yeah, like they're like you know, making plans for dating and all in the comments.
Yes,
that also happens.
Yeah, that I
think right, so quite bizarre. So, my bizarre news is Donald Trump and his recent press conference. So I don't know if you guys saw the CBS reporter. She's of Asian origin, right?
Uh-huh.
And she was asking him questions. Her name is Weijia Jiang. And she was asking him questions about why he continues to claim wrongly, you know, that the US is performing better than other countries in terms of testing. You know, and she's like, and he keeps bringing up China. She's like, why does that matter? You know, so why, what is this global competition every day? Because Americans are still losing their lives. So Trump is like, they're losing their lives everywhere in the world. And maybe that is a question you should ask China. Don't ask me. Mm-hmm. He specifically told that to her because, you know, she has Asian features, right? So, and she was, she's a feisty one. So she was, she interrupted him and she's like, why are you saying that to me specifically? And he's like, no, I'm not saying it to anyone specifically. I'm just saying it to anybody who asks me a nasty question like that. How is that a nasty question? And then he just abruptly ended the meeting. So yeah, that was quite bizarre.
I mean, trust Trump to do that. But, you know, at least he takes a press conference. I mean, I really think like we're at such low bars as far as like press freedom or test like transparency goes with these governments. So I mean, I really don't mind even if he shows up with the swab and like and all that, you know. I'm like, at least he shows up. Like,
true,
least,
true. You know, even if he
raises questions, no matter like how bizarrely and stupidly and of course racially he might answer and respond, like it's still better than like getting like this little triggering, you know. Like warning, 8 o'clock hour, you know, there will be what stress and you don't know fuck what's gonna happen, like, you know what.
That's, I mean, that brings me to my next question. What did you guys think of the last yesterday's address?
Yesterday by our prime minister, it was quite all right. Mm-hmm. Compared to the other address to the nation.
In what way?
You know you go up and bang your plates. And,
okay. At least he didn't ask us to do anything bizarre like that.
Yes. At least he didn't ask us. At least he has something. But he made me count all the zeros. Okay, last thing. I mean, come on, man. 20 lakh crore. I had to count the zeros, literally.
Oh, my God. And Meekpeace, what about you? What did you think?
I honestly zoned out because, I mean, it was just like, I mean, I think someone rightly put it, like, there was just a lot of, like, Hindi, there was a lot of Sanskrit, and there was just, like,
exactly.
Cutting words, as they call it, you know, and then, which amounted to really nothing, you know, and, of course, things that he needed to be addressing, things that has really, you know, sort of put the government in a very, very, like, you know, grim light. We're not directed. So there's just like, okay, you know, so I'm gonna announce this relief package again. Like, there is no, like, there's just zeros. There are zeros that we're supposed to count and be grateful for, but like, what way will this be, you know, how, who would help, you know, how would it be dispensed? I mean, none of that. The process, see, the process is where we are all like sort of in the dark right now, and that's where we shedding his light on in either Shuddh Hindi or Shuddh Sanskrit or Shuddh anything, you know. But just like talk about that, you know, in very sort of concrete terms. So I really zoned out. Most of us, we were like all like sort of, you know, talking to different like, you know, friend groups and journal groups and stuff like that. And like guessing games or something like that. Some of them doing their drinking shot games perhaps. at the end of it, neither did it amount to like a task, a big boss kind of a task, nor did it. Nor did it amount to like him, even for that matter, just being clear enough that, you know, listen, be prepared for like a fourth phase, because it's clearly coming, but no, there is no like, oh, we will let you know before 18. So like, how
exactly is? Why is everything at the last moment? I don't understand. And also, that was a major issue. I don't know why. First of all, okay, you speak in Hindi, that's your language, you know, that's fine, but at least put subtitles or have a translator or something, you know.
It's
a huge issue that, it's surprising. Anyway, so let's get to our conversation about the ground reports you guys have been doing and what's going on. So my first question to both of you is, what do you think are some of the issues faced by people that are intrinsic to the Northeast, which are not the same in other parts of the country?
Oh, okay. That's you mean like in the context of
COVID? The pandemic? Yes.
Right. I mean, I think it is, there is this gap in information, certainly, and that gap information you see like even in the heart of like, you know, sort of metropolitan cities, which are like, you know, these huge red containment zones and things like that. But I mean, here, because of like the sheer lack of numbers in a lot of places, there is just, everything is so speculative, you know. So people are also then very lost and confused. Honestly, like, even as reporters, it has been very difficult to kind of follow back from fiction, but also to really understand what is the government strategy and or even just the protocol that they're following. So we are having to sit and like, you know, like kind of almost decipher it. It's like it's some sort of a Da Vinci code.
Yes.
It shouldn't be that way. You know? But I mean, if I want to just like kind of talk about like, you know, what has been like, what I also kind of covered in my last report for India Spend, where I looked at just the numbers and the data for a change, which is very, I would say personally, like quite a huge shift for me, because I mostly tend to do very ground reportage, but because of the pandemic and everything, and I'll talk to you maybe a little later about some of my own sort of, you know, debates within my own mind about going out and reporting. I've been restricted to like, you know, sort of working from home and making all my calls, etc. But this particular story, I thought it was important to just bring out the numbers only just because, you know, the underlying health infrastructure in the region is generally like absent, if not broken, if not inefficient, you know.
Right.
And, I just found that like at least the national reporters who are out here, I think there are like dailies like Highland Post and others in, you know, select states who are doing like a good job of actually like, you know, bringing out some important like, you know, sort of truth serums, if you can call it, you know. I mean, basically hard realities about you know, our broken infrastructure. But overall, like, national reporters based here have not really been I would say they've not been really doing the most terrific job of like, you know, bringing out either pressing you know, government officials on giving those details and bringing them out, or just asking those tough questions. So I felt like it was just like, it would be like a sobering reality to just bring out, you know, what has been like, you know, what is the status of our infrastructure. I mean, the article was honestly like really voluminous enough to like,
about,
you know, everything from just how many ICU beds we have and, you know, what is the number of testing that has been done and things like that.
Right.
One really needs to also now actually go into like testing protocols and strategy and what is like, I mean, in the sense overall, not like day to day, as it's been kind of changing and evolving. Like I said, it's been difficult for reporters to keep up pace with it, you know.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, that sort of like I you know, suspected, as well as a lot of that suspicion came to you know, also confirmation when I spoke to like, you know, experts as well as health workers, officials, you know, from different states. I mean, following up on 8 states and all of them on call was not the most pleasant of experiences, especially when you're so used to and you prefer like meeting people on the ground or meeting people.
Right. I found your report really good. I mean, it was everybody should read this report by Makepeace. It's on indiaspend.com and it's titled "With Low COVID-19 Numbers, Northeastern States Not Doing Enough to Test and Prepare." Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So, Ree, do you have anything to add to this?
Yeah, I agree with Pease when she says that we have very limited information, then we tend to speculate. Right now here in Meghalaya, you know, when the first COVID patient was detected, so we just came to know that he's a doctor. And then at night, they say that the doctor is stable and is doing well. And the next morning he passed away. All right, see, the preparation level of the government here was very low. Because what happened after the doctor passed away, there was no protocol on how to bury the dead body. Because that was the time when the people protested, when it was about to be cremated in some locality here. So the people came out in huge numbers and they protested that.
Right.
That itself says a lot. What has the government done? All the time, they have set up testing centers. Right, fine, but the testing cent are so limited. You know, they have to send to Assam.
Right. So how many testing centers are there in Meghalaya right now?
Right now, we have only Shillong Civil Hospital and Negrims. And
so
Negrims do the yes, and it was just upgraded to 90 tests just recently.
Recently,
from 90, it was raised. So the level of testing, just like what Mickey says, we just have to take a look at that. You know?
Actually, Rikinti, I just want to ask you, because I when was the Shillong Civil Hospital also set up, you know, for testing? Because I'm not, I wasn't aware of that. And the last that I was told was that the total capacity in the state was 99. I don't know why 99, but...
No. Civil Hospital is the Corona Care Center.
Correct.
Was the Corona Care Center, then Negrims is the only testing center.
Right, yeah. Okay, I just wanted to go.
Okay, what are the, what is the general reaction of the people, I mean, to the pandemic, and how strict are the lockdown rules, and are people following it?
See, in Meghalaya, when the lockdown was imposed, there was, the people didn't follow. All right, so soon after the first COVID patient was detected, that was when everyone was like scared, you know? After that, we had after the protest there in a locality, social distancing was totally broken. So then, but somehow the police have managed to. But there are, you know, the Dorbar Shnong we have here, the headmen, right, in different localities. So these are the people who have been able to, you know, to contain the residents of the particular locality, because we can see them doing patrolling duties, helping the police out. So lockdown has been a bit enforced here in Meghalaya.
Okay, so yeah, that brings me to my question for you, Ree, that, you know, since Meghalaya has an autonomous tribal system, right, which is followed, and
yes,
the headman is the guy in command. So, so they are helping, basically, they are helping the government and the police to carry out the... Okay, and in what other ways can you, I mean, can you give any other examples of how they're dealing with this? In their own villages,
in different localities, in their different villages, they have been able to, they've been able to set up. Some Dorbars have been able to set up quarantine center. Now we have 2 quarantine center in the state being set up by these Dorbarshna. So these stranded people who comes from outside the state, they can be quarantined there, because the government, you know, they have been asking people to go for home quarantine. So how much can you just check on that? because
yeah,
you can't.
And also putting families at risk in a way.
Yes. Yeah. So we in the state right now we have only two Doorbashnals who have set up quarantine centers. One is in Southwest Khasi Hills and the other is in East Khasi Hills. So the people who are coming back from other states, they can directly go to those quarantine centers. So in a way, the Doorbashnal has helped, you know,
a lot. Right. And I was reading a report where the reporter, he was basically talking about how the numbers of COVID numbers are so low in the Northeast. And, you know, he was basically listing out the multiple reasons for it. And one of them was cooperation between different tribes. So he gave an example of how in Manipur, because in the hills, people grow their own food and their vegetables, right? So when they came to know in Kangpokpi, I think, when people came to know that in the plains, villages are suffering due to shortage of vegetables, they actually sent it across to them. So how good is the cooperation between different tribes, you know? And this is like a general question I'm asking across the Northeast of any instances that you guys know of.
I mean, I think that it really varies. It's hard to kind of make a very generalized statement, you know, about this, because really, like, it is a very diverse society, you know, and then with every district, forget any every state, there are the politics is also very, very variant, right? So it's can't really, like, I mean, let's say, like, Mizoram has been sort of cited as like this role model. Now Mizoram, the way that the Mizo society functions is so vastly different from the way that the Khasi society, let's say, I mean, as an example, would function. So it's not as like, you know, distancing and things like that, or for that matter, like lockdown measures are so differently enforced in a place like Aizawl as it would be compared to a place like Shillong. And I mean, in Guwahati, where I'm staying, is entirely different. Guwahati is pretty much like a, you know, metropolitan city.
Yeah, it is.
It can be more easily comparable to, let's say, any other, like, you know, Calcutta or any other, for that matter, Delhi, in the sense when you sort of, you know, see it in the backdrop of these other towns which have like a more of, let's say, sort of a tribal kind of a society, mechanism in place. So it's hard to say. Yes, that example is relevant. And I mean, you know, I at least haven't until so far come across many really major strifes. Yet at the same time, while I'm speaking of like Mizos being, you know, I mean, and it's true, they are extremely self-disciplined, and you know, the whole sort of function that they have there, you know, with the whole the civil society and church, I mean, the way they work in tandem is quite amazing, right? But things also go function in a very unquestioned manner. So, you know, like they have their deputed sort of like watch guard, something like that, you know, for every, like, what they've got, like the Young Mizo Association, which is like the biggest civil society body.
Yeah.
They have their little watch bodies in every bang or locality, as they call it, you know. So think people are like, people obey without question. People are actually fearful of them more than they would be fearful of like of the police, or for that matter, the government, you know. Yes. Things, I mean, like the idea of authority works so differently in different parts of the Northeast. I don't think that's necessarily the same, even in, like, to the extent that I know, I think maybe Rikinti might differ with me, but I don't think that kind of a fear of authority is as much there with a Doorbashnal. Something like that, you know, in Meghala. I haven't seen that. I mean, there is of course some reverence, but not the same kind that you see in Mizoram. However, though, in the midst of this pandemic, there certain, you know, sort of let's say fault lines have not entirely disappeared. Like there's been clashes that have reportedly, I would say, of course, because I haven't been able to confirm anything on my own, but reportedly there have been clashes that have broken out between, you know, the Brus and the Misos in the, you know, Tripura and Mizoram border. So, I mean, now that's like a long standing fight, right? So, I mean, things have happened even just before the lockdown happened. There was a clash between, you know, the Kukis and the Nagas in Manipur as well, you know, which largely went unreported. So things have been happening. It's just that I think this is, again, like, something I keep sort of, you know, reiterating. The problem also with the news media, and again, the blame doesn't entirely lie with the news media, but with the public in general, like with mainland public, as we call it here, that you only want these, like, you know, this kind of very sugary, you know, sweet stories from the north.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Oh, look at the way these guys do it. It's amazing. Like, they're like some paragon or something of, like, I don't know, whatever. Like,
you know,
immunity or, like, self-discipline and, you know, whatever. Like, it's like, one thing is to complain or talk about the lack of coverage. And the other thing, it doesn't make it better by just, you know, putting out these any good feel good stories at the cost of actually what needs to be reported, you know. That really I mean, I think also because there's a lot of majoritarianism at play over here, you know. So what you might have one majority community from the region saying that, oh, you know, we don't get covered enough, but then, you know, often at the cost and let's say, you know, a lot of other, like, minority communities, you know, being trampled upon, you know, their rights or whatever, welfare being trampled upon. So it's important to take a critical look at the region always while appreciating all the good stuff that also comes.
That makes sense. Thank you. And Ree, do you have anything to add to this? What about in Meghalaya? You know, we have the Khasis and the Gentiles and the Garos. I mean, how is it working there?
Yeah, I mean, these traditional traditional Rabashnongis, they have given lend a hand to the government in this time. But then, you know, there are certain Rabashnongs, you know. Recently, we carried a story about a village, and there are about 250 of them there in a block in the international border. Right. So these people did not have these ration cards.
Yes, yes.
All of them are being categorized as BPL. And for 2 years, they didn't have these ration cards. Now, isn't it the Dorbashnong who are responsible, you know, enough to, to create an awareness, all right, or to help them out in getting these ration cards?
Right.
So it is under the lockdown that such reports came out.
Yeah, you mentioned in your report that that the headman, the Dorbashnong, he wrote to the BDO, the local BDO, right? But even then, there was nothing was
there done. There was nothing, yes. Yeah. It was until we carried the report that the very next day, some NGOs had gone to give them food and the legal service intervened.
Right.
So about last year, we carried a report about 30,000 ration cards not being distributed. And now this has come to light that, yes, there are lapses in the department. So such Dorbashnongs, you know, and just recently, to add to that, there are women in a village. This is in East Khasiyas itself. They were complaining that they got their free rice is supposed to be given to them 5 kgs.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and another 100 grams of dal.
Right.
So the Dorbashnong, what they do is they give them 4 kg of rice and 800 grams of dal. So when they went and complained, the BDO there was quite emotional. Said you cannot part with that. I mean, you can also give to the poor. I mean, 1 kg that we cut.
Yeah.
So, which means that, you know, you're stealing from the poor and you're giving from the poor. Then the people should have questioned why they don't have the ration cards. I mean, the quota comes from the center. The quota of rice comes from the center.
So where is all this rice and other groceries? Where is it all going? Because
according to them, they're distributing it to some other poor people.
Yeah, that's a whole thing. That's a huge,
even in Assam, there was a similar case, right, Makepeace?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not as clued in with what's happening in Assam this particularly, but I have been hearing a lot about this in Manipur. I mean, largely because, I mean, you know, since I was doing the story on all the arrests that happened, a lot of it was, you know, were criticizing or highlighting the fact that people were not getting their due ration and all of that, right? So there was a lot of questions, I would say, not even criticisms around the PDS and stuff. And people were they were getting visits by the police for, posting stuff on Facebook or other social media platforms. So, which is why it kind of became a story unto itself. But that's, again, like this whole PDS thing has been a pandemic in the region.
yes.
Okay, so Makepeace, since you did that report on India's pen, can you tell us, can you just give us a brief overview of what the situation is like in different states, how many red zones, orange zones, and what are the numbers like right now?
I'll have to also just refer back to the story.
You can do that.
At the moment, how things stand, I think there's only just one red zone, although I don't know why Guwahati hasn't as yet been declared, but there's only one red zone in the entire Northeast, which is in Tripura, Dhalai, where you've had of course, an increasing 100 odd or something cases that have come up in one BSF battalion, right? So, if I'm not wrong, it all really started with some two or one of BSF Jawan coming back from leave on the 11th of March, and he was tested positive. Almost if I'm not wrong, months or something later, you know. So, there's also again, of course, one can go to different tangents of this is also a point at which, as a reporter, you think about, oh my God, the fact that he was asymptomatic for that long. The way that the virus operates or takes its toll on different bodies is only something which is so bizarre and amazing, I guess. There really isn't one size that fits all, right?
True.
And then on the other end, you're was he screened? Screening is clearly not sufficient.
Yeah.
So, things like that. So in Tripura, that has become a one red zone. With all the other states, I think Assam, again, because of some people who returned most recently from Rajasthan, there have been an upsurge in cases. So the story I did for India Spend is about a week old. So I don't want to refer too much to that data and things.
Right.
Because COVID, developments are very rapid. But what I could just say, though, is that since the story was carried, one is that there is, one of my story was definitely one of the few which sort of talked about this spread of community, this fear of community spread, So just before a few days before the story was published, there were four cases, which were detected from this otherwise green zone, in Bongaigaon, in Assam. Yeah.
Mm.
And suddenly four cases erupted, and they came out of 40 samples of ILI patients who were randomly tested.
Okay.
So that's something that the government, the state government has been doing since the 15th of April, but they're still doing it randomly because they can't afford to as yet test every ILI patient and all that. And like I said, there's a lot of confusion, or for that matter, lack of clarity around this testing protocol or strategy, if there is even a strategy at place,
Right.
That community spread thing, I'm glad at least that I could sort of bring that to light and start that conversation. And now, because in the intervening week, we've had these, upsurge in cases in Guwahati. And now, there is this, I think it certainly has affected, people's psyche a lot more clearly that, there is a very clear present threat of community spread, that there are cases which have not been able to be traced, GMCH is been shut down, and GMCH is a very important lifeline, right? Not just for Assam, but also for the region, quite an extent. Although other states have their dedicated COVID care centers, they have their COVID treatment hospitals as well, but for serious cases they were coming to GMCH and stuff, you know, or that was being like, you know, relied upon as a referral place. So yeah, that's like, that kind of really I think sent you know, at least Guwahatians into a bit of a dizzy and panicky abhi kaha jaye types, you know, because
right but surprisingly, even the the government at the center also still maintains that there is no community transmission, which is quite surprising.
Yeah, I could thankfully get like officials, like, I mean, the thing that, you know, because again, I'm going back to a lot about, you know, press freedom here, because honestly, while also doing the story, I was extremely like, A, careful, and B, fearful, you know. My last story was on just like, you know, everyone being like sort of, you know, detained or booked or something. Yes. So I was like, I was lucky enough to get like every quote, every comment on record. Like there was not a single comment that was off the record or like anonymously quoted, you know. Yes. And I could like actually not, like, I would say establish, but at least like, you know, legitimately talk about community spread, because I had an official, you know, joint director of health, you know, say that, you know, that the cases were indicative of community spread, because there was no common, you know, so no common point, not like they came from Tablighi Jamaat, because for like, till easily till April, for most of April actually, the entire region was just sitting and blaming Tablighi Jamaat.
Yeah,
all for all cases and for bringing the virus here and things like that, you know. So yeah, now I fear though that might happen with the people who are being expatriated in a way by the government, like all the migrants and everything who've been stranded in different cities and stuff, and they've all started coming back. And I know that while of course there is now, different states have different sort of approaches to how they're going to screen them. It's again, there is no kind of a uniformity to it. Assam will be only testing the symptomatic ones. Manipur is testing everyone without fail, which perhaps is a good idea, because they're trying to keep things, you know, sort of, they're trying to maintain their zero COVID status. To the best extent that I know, Mizoram, which I thought was bizarre, the director of the NHM director told me they would be conducting like rapid antibody tests on the people who will be returning.
Okay.
Yeah, which I'm still like a little bit like, unsure of it, because I also try to be more unsure of things, because I feel like I don't come from a science background and I'm not a science reporter, so to speak.
Yeah.
But again, to the best that I know, and from the, you know, whatever strategies, etc., that have been put out by, you know, by the ICMR and all of that, I don't know what is that going to lead to.
So, as far as I know, even I don't know, I mean, I don't understand that much, but then what I was reading about these antibody tests is that it's still, even after conducting the test, first of all, it's very complicated. And secondly, that, you know, there's no hard and fast result that comes out.
It's always
a very dodgy situation.
Correct.
Cool. You know, in fact, I don't know how much these tests are effective, but the 13th COVID patient that was detected here in Meghalaya was after a month, you know. She was tested negative after the earlier positive patient passed away on the 14th. So she was tested negative. And then just recently on Saturday, that is on the 9th of May, she was tested positive. So I don't know how these tests functions. But it leaves lots of questions.
Truly. And also there, we have had so many reports. Now I think the government stopped using those tests, but the tests that we got from China, there were multiple reports of them being faulty.
You think apart from the two Chinese companies which were already retracted?
Yeah, I'm talking about those only.
Okay.
So my next question is, I think you guys have already addressed that. Maybe you've already addressed that partly in your answers. But how transparent are the governments there, you know, when it comes to releasing numbers and keeping the public informed? You know, because you must have heard in Delhi and in West Bengal, the state governments have been accused of fudging up numbers. So,
you know, I would call it, you know, We usually have our daily briefings at 5 or 5:30 or 6.
Okay, and this is via social media?
Yes, via social media. And you know, before the suppose if they have some cured patient or death patient or any patient which tested positive, that we get it on Twitter or Facebook. So we call them the Twitter boys. All right. Now, I mean, a government, you have to give us officially in writing that these are the people who have been tested positive and that their conditions. Now the medical, we have never had a press conference with any medical experts who will explain to us how they are being treated. And those numbers usually come only from the CMO office or either from the press briefing. Because we also have our own limitations, you know. We cannot send our reporters out without any protective gear. We cannot do that. So we have to depend on the government. And there has been no official writing coming from the health department detailing us on how they are being treated. So all we know is from social media. So that's why all those comments come, you know.
Like, I just want to like add a really hilarious like, you know, anecdote.
Yeah, please.
Compiling these numbers that you see in the article, like I said, apart from the fact it was such a you know, harrowing task, because you know I looked at all of the online portals that the government have to date, and the time of the writing that piece or publishing it rather, I think the only state which had like the most comprehensive data portal was Nagaland, surprisingly. Right. I mean, now we're not even going into like whether these numbers can be reliable or not. I'm not even getting to that part of the question as yet, but just even in terms of divulging information, right? I mean, that was one source. So like, you know, wherever I could get some limited thing asking for like, you know, the briefings of the day typically just have like how many people they've quarantined, how many quarantine centers they've got, you know, like and you know, number of samples tested and stuff, but they didn't have enough like since my story was a lot of on the was on the health infrastructure, there wasn't like, you know, information on how many PP suits they've procured, you know, N95 and other sort of, you know, requisite material or something like that. Actually, they should also be putting out just how many, like, what is the strength of the manpower as well, like how many doctors do that?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
How many lab technicians? All of those things should be put out, you know, for the real picture of what the situation is like. You know, what do the public have to like, you know, have in their state to rely on. So I remember like particularly with Meghalaya, I had such a huge difficulty accessing numbers. I had tried like you know, I think the health director, and he passed me on to like some PRO, like, or some designated spokesperson who was completely unresponsive. I don't know if Rikinti's experience
is yes it's
but we know who we're talking about here. Unresponsive. Like, I tried, like, I mean, and I think I spoke to him once, and he's like, you know, you drop your questions on WhatsApp. Did that as well. No response, nothing, you know. I mean, there's just no point even trying like CMO. So there, I would even like, you know, actually go and look at a lot of Conrad Sangma's tweet. And I remember one particular tweet, I think he was tweeting like photos of like some sort of a big screen they had in their control room.
It's a control room.
With all of the like some figures and stuff, I literally was zooming into that screen to see like foods, and they've got like these many whatever ICU beds and stuff. I'm like, that's the kind of stuff that and to kind of, you know, safeguard myself, I can say that, listen, this is what the I saved that photo so I can show that this is what the PMO tweeted, you know. And then I also had my partner questioning me, and rightly so, that, you know, can we reliably say that this is a reliable number, because it's not coming in a press release, right?
Yes, it's not coming.
It's such a conundrum at these moments, because you're like, you know, well, the press briefing does not contain those details. Your spokesperson or your health director is not responding. You know, nor are your like people in the cabinet or the CMO himself or something like that. So I have to rely on like a zoomed in, you know, data or something that just happened to slip up or something. I'm sure he is aware that, you know, these things would be like scrutinized and stuff. But that's kind of hustling, almost you could say, one has had to do with even just cleaning what data is there. Reliability, it's a different thing now. That's something that really needs to Yeah, I mean, because we all, I also had that experience with the story where different officials were saying different things. So there is no, even you have officials who are not on the same page, you know. Mm-hmm. So I so, question, yeah.
Yeah, to add to that, Makepeace, if you remember, the CMO tweeted that the 11th COVID patient was tested positive for the sixth time or for the fifth time.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
A lot of people, you know, that creates a lot of confusion. People started, you know, spreading rumors that now we have 11 COVID patients. So what do we do?
Oh, yeah. Oh my God. Okay.
So that's the thing, you know, in social media, you can't just do that.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not surprising, actually, because the center, the government at the center itself, if you guys remember, I think a month ago or maybe a little more than that, the Prime Minister himself had a meeting with all these top TV news anchors. The main thing that came out of the meeting was how he told them to focus on positive news. And which is so surprising because in the middle of a pandemic, we don't need positive or negative. We don't care about that. We just need transparency. We need to know exactly what's going on, right?
Yes.
I mean, yeah, so that is, well.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's sort of like, you know, that's really like become, I mean, that was a whole, I guess, angst, I guess, on my part also, which, you know, at least if nothing else, drove me to do the story, because there was this thing like, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm seeing like these stories of strength. And I mean, I'm like, it's good, like do the positive story. But I'm like, you know, we have an absence of just stories which are like actually giving information, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, yeah, I honestly had it up to here with all this positive stories, and not to mention the many of them. At least, I mean, I don't know enough about, I guess, in the mainland, perhaps things are so, like, obviously, you know, kind of outwardly so grim with all the migrant crisis. But here, at least, because of the lack of information, you know, people were just like, oh, yeah, the Northeast is COVID-free.
Yeah. Because,
you know, this, that, and they're so disciplined, and they're so, like, you know, nice, and, like, I mean, I was just like, yeah, like, this is, like, really not, like, I think, I remember speaking, in fact, to this woman in Garo Hills, right, in Ipura. So, I think, Nikita, you're also aware of it was shared in the group, she was stitching up, like, PPE suits, yes. Right?
Oh, so, yeah.
So, you know, something like this. Now, this is something I felt was like a very classic example as far as, like, how do you report the story that a woman has set up this whole tailoring unit and there she's stitching PPE suits. You can call it a good initiative and you can say that, you know, I mean, and it is. I mean, she's taking that effort and she's you know, procuring the material and all that. I spoke to her quite a bit in detail about what is the material she's using, where is she procuring it from, all of that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, PPE suits is also, I mean, it's not like, you know, whatever, it's not something that you can just, you know, upcycle and recycle or something.
Yes, yes,
right?
Yes, of course.
It is a medical wear. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you have, like, you know, we've also been talking a lot. I mean, there's also been a lot of news about faulty PPE suits. So, while this woman's effort and her initiative is very commendable, and she was talking about the fact that, you know, they're really, like, the hospitals had asked me for it. So that, I mean, there, to me, that is a bigger story, that, you know, you are, hospitals are asking, like, you know, self-starters and entrepreneurs to actually, like, stitch them PPE suits. It's one thing to do that with the mask, but PPE suits is a whole different ball game. It's not the, yes. It's not the same thing as a 3-ply mask. Yeah,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. So it's a more foolproof thing. It's something that requires, like, you know, a proper verification stamp and all of that stuff, right? Like, whatever, some approval and everything. So now you could report that as a vector, you know, look at these little corona warriors, virus warriors. Or you actually talk about, like, how grim the situation is, that, you know, something is still better than nothing for people living in such remote parts. But that something is not actually, like, you know, something substantive, really. It's just, like, it's actually, like, quite, I would say it's quite sorry a situation, you know, that someone has had to, like, you know, stitch these PPE suits that, you know, people at which at best I would say works like a placebo more than like any kind of a foolproof protection.
Yeah. Makepeace, since you're talking about, it's quite obvious that there is a shortage of PPEs. Can you also, I mean, in your report, it was quite evident that even testing facilities are lacking, right? Can you elaborate a little more on that?
I mean, it's a question of the region being very vast, you know? I mean, like, of course, let's say a place like Assam is fairly, I would say it's fairly equipped. However, you know, I mean, again, like I said, that story to me in many ways, because of the situation developing soon, really rapidly, it's a bit dated right now, because the questions have moved on to even, there are testing centers which have a backlog of samples that need to be, like, you know, for which the results haven't come out. So that is where the conversation is right now at. But if I had to just recap, at the time of writing the story, you know, like Arunachal got its first testing center at the end of April or beginning of May, first May or something, I think it was inaugurated, although they hadn't really started testing samples, at least till I was, you know, writing that story. And Arunachal is a huge city, right? Like, it's 3,000 something kilometers per square.
Yeah.
It has a very low density of population, granted. But, you know, someone coming from one corner, like somewhere, you know, bordering China or something like that, would have, I mean, his or her sample or their sample would have to, like, try and make this huge, one long, arduous journey or something, you know, all the way to a Nahar Lagoon or, for that matter, in Dibrugarh or something, before they get to know that, you know, they're tested positive or negative. So, I mean, it's like the testing centers, it's not enough to say you got 20 or 30 or whatever, any number like that. It has to be proportionate to the, I mean, the way at least I think it's should be done, or should ideally be approached as well, is by the, you know, sort of the area, right? So, yeah. I mean, Assam is not as big as Arunachal, but it has 6 testing centers. Arunachal just has 1 right now, you know. But I mean, having said that, though, these things are also, like, I mean, infrastructure is one thing, but it's also capacity. Tripura has had just 1 testing center. I mean, they're not even, like, necessarily moving to have more than 1. But that has, like, some amazing capacity. They've been, like, testing up to, they claim to have a testing, you know, capacity of up to 900 samples a day.
Wow.
You know? And it's also true that if I'm not wrong, I read one of the reports or something which said that it was, like, the 5th, like, you know, in terms of testing, it was ranking 5th. In the entire country. They've certainly been, their testing, you know, their testing rate has certainly been much higher than many, in fact, you know, states in the mainland which are grappling with far more positive cases. So they're definitely testing, like, you know, like, quite crazily. So it's a bit like, I think this conversation is also, like, I mean, it's very easy for us to say, like, again, you know, a lot of this is so entrenched in, again, to me, I think, in science and things like that. So it's easy to say, ki, there should be more testing centers. But at the same time, ki, you can't have, even if Arunachal were to get like 10 testing centers, for example, would that be sufficient? If like each testing center could only process like 50 a day, you know?
Right. True. So Makepeace, quickly, I mean, going back to what you said about the backlog in test results, right? Why is that happening? Is that because of shortage of personnel or shortage of labs? What's happening?
No, to the best of my knowledge, I at least think, I don't have anything confirmed right now, so I don't want to, like, you know, put anything out there, you know, having cross-checked and confirmed stuff. But to the best of my knowledge, there is a lag, but there is something more to the story, which I would say it's still right now being, you know, found out, or it's still right now being, you know, more details need to be, whatever, obtained for them. I don't want to say as yet, like, but what the easier guess right now, sure, certainly, is that there is you know, with the number of samples coming in. So one is also, you can see that, okay, yeah, yes, it's true that, state governments need to test more, all of that, but you also need the infrastructure. Again, infrastructure goes back to your equipment and your human resources as well. So there is that lag as well, as far as human resources, lab technicians and everything, you know, to handle that kind of capacity. So that, I think, if I'm not wrong, someone had done the story. I'm right now very, very like, you know, my brain is like kind of a little bit muddled with COVID story. Was it from Delhi or was it from Guwahati or something? It's a bit like everywhere. But that has been off-cited by, if I'm not wrong, entirely like nationally as well. It's been sort of reported from different states that, you know, they simply don't have that kind of human resource bandwidth to deal with that many.
Yeah, families. Yeah. So, true. And Ree, I wanted to ask you, you know, since you run a newspaper and we've seen how print media has taken such a huge hit in terms of ads and circulation because of the pandemic. Yes. How has your newspaper been affected, and what are some of the major problems that have emerged?
Printing wise, so we are okay. We do manage, but when it comes to sending reporters outside, you know, we don't have that. We have limitations, you know. Like I earlier said, we don't have enough protective gears to give them to cover. So what we're doing now is we're managing. Three we go in the daytime and three more in the afternoon, and we have three in the evening, and the rest of us we work from home. So that in terms of that we do manage. Okay. I mean, from home.
And what about ads? Have you seen a drop in ads, especially from the government?
No, from the government we do have ads, but you know, these classified ads that we don't get them, you know. Okay. Like we usually do.
Right. Okay. Now coming to, you know, Makepeace, you also did a report on it. Now this question goes to both of you. You know, we have seen so many instances ever since this lockdown happened of, you know, the government trying to gag the media. So many journalists have been booked, they've been arrested, threatened, assaulted, you know, all kinds of things. I mean, our reporter Ayush, he made a list of all these instances, and, you know, according to that report, in Uttar Pradesh alone, 8 journalists were booked. And Makepeace, you did a similar report, right, from Manipur.
Yeah. There were no journalists booked in the report that I did in, you know, I mean, the month of April mostly. So, but yeah, there were like basically a lot of
activists.
Like your top citizens, some activists as well. But yeah, generally, the gagging of, or the attempted gagging, I would say, of media has been sort of going on in, like, you know, under the BJP government in Manipur. So I mean, again, I was also sort of, I also brought that back into but. As I said, like, you know, while I was also doing the story, I was also extremely sort of careful as well as fearful in terms of, you know, what goes and nothing. I mean, it's not even about like, it's not a fear of like just even getting booked or arrested. I think that really should not loom large on any reporter while doing a story. It's just for the sake of like getting, you know, the accuracy correct, you know, getting the facts right and all of that, right? But that's the question. I mean, rather the concern atop on everyone's mind is also that, you know, so what happened was there was a press conference in which my story was raised as a question about, you know, whatever the number of, like, you know, whether like Assam, I mean, since I had also, you know, highlighted that what has been like the kind of, you know, situation with testing in Assam. Someone had brought this, you know, to the fore in the press conference with the health minister. And the health minister sort of summarily dismissed the report, calling it a survey for I don't know what reasons. But, you know, sort of summarily dismissed it, saying that, oh, you know, I don't know about these people and what are their motives and things like that. And I mean, you know, I have obviously, like, I had reached out to him, sent him questions, you know, tried calling him, like, you know, I've called his deputies as well, in fact, in his department and stuff, you know, and they were not placed to answer quite a few of these questions. If I had to sort of informally speak, you know, I didn't even, I could have been more nasty and said that, you know, like, you know, I reached out to the deputy, then they were clueless. But, like, mm-hmm. I wanted to just kind of stick to the facts of the story without, like, even for that matter, bringing in unnecessary drama or anything like that, you know? So, but that is a response of what, I mean, what I'm trying to actually really say here is that was a response of the health minister, which is not true. Like, there was, you know, there were queries sent his way. There were, you know, sort of, he was reached out to his folk for his comments, as were his, as were the officials in his department, and as were the district officials in his department, who've also been quoted in the story. So I'm not sure why, what is that, what kind of a response is that supposed to mean when you say you're talking about motives of reporters, you know? I mean, it's not, it's hardly answering the question. It's not, it's completely like dodging it, right? And he'd done that before as well. Like, a report mentioned that I referred to in my story was the one done by Indian Express, the Delhi edition.
Yeah.
Where they talked about, like, you know, there were some of these poor performing states and how, like, the center had, like, kind of pulled up some of these states for, like, you know, how they were very ill-equipped with their infrastructure, again, the health infrastructure, ICU beds, and ICU beds, and that kind of stuff. So someone had raised that question as well in the press, one of the press conferences with the health minister, and you know, again, like, his response was just that, you know, like, I don't know, like, I mean, I think in many ways, I think, like, the health minister's response is very Trumpian, like, you know.
I was just going to say that. Like, I don't know. Like, you know how Trump calls everything fake news.
Yeah, like, he's that. Thought of doing that. Maybe he has he has more finesse than Trump, I mean, imagine. Yeah, but it's like, it's not entirely out of the ballpark of that kind of response.
Right.
I mean, you know, we have been told by the government that we are doing absolutely fine. Like, we've got a lot of PPE suits, and this PPE suits also has become, like, such a buzzword of, like, you know, like, health reporting. It had become, thankfully, it has moved from that. But at a time, at least in April or something like that, you know, I mean, also because the 50,000 PPE suits were procured, like, you know, privately by the state government. I mean, that's I hope you understand the oxymoron in that statement when you're saying that state government is privately purchased, you know, PPE. Yeah. 50,000 of them from, like, you know, some Chinese companies and all of that, which then later seemed to be, like, I don't know, retracted, which is also unclear what else, if those PPE suits are being used, but they're certainly being counted as, you know, as whatever, the capacity of the government.
Ree, do you have anything to add to that about, you know, the media being gagged and journalists being targeted, and even not just journalists, anybody who's trying to question the government?
Talking about Meghalaya, we have been very careful. I mean, we have...
In what sense?
I mean, there has been no threats. I mean, currently, there has been no threats. And we are provided with information. So, yeah.
All right. Makepeace, can you quickly tell our listeners about the case of, you know, how Manipur government is using sedition, which itself is such a problematic law, on just random people for their social media posts? Can you just tell us about Jyotin Mehta, right? He's a teacher. Can you quickly tell us what happened?
So, well, actually, this is such a convoluted story, but I led with that story because that was also one of the most recent incident that had happened. So there's this 26-year-old school teacher, you know, who just basically, like, put up, like, a sarcastic post, one of those, like, you know, those text color posts on Facebook or something, like, asking in Metelon, like, you know, I don't even know the name of the MLA. Do we even have an MLA or something of this kind? I mean, he doesn't say anything more than that, like, but just, like, you know, does anyone know who's the MLA of this constituency, you know? And, like I said, that at the backdrop of that, the whole thing is the PDS, right? Like, this whole distribution of, like, rice and everything that the government had apparently been taking under on a war footing. So, the funny thing was that the MLA of that constituency was a Congress elected leader.
Okay.
You know, a Congress elected leader, sort of, you know, and the next thing you know, this guy, along with four others who had basically just simply liked and commented on his post, were all booked under sedition. And one of the people who had liked to comment or engage with his post was also a minor. So they were basically, you know, picked up by the police, and they were booked under sedition, some other charges, other sections as well. And I think if they were kept in custody for maybe like I think 24 to 48 hours. I forget now exactly the duration, but they were in custody. They were in custody for that much time at a time when there's a pandemic, you know, going on. And I mean, you know, finally, the charges only sort of kind of like did not
hold.
Yeah, did not hold at the CGM court, you know. So, but and obviously, like the thing is that all of these sort of FIRs, including Jotun's, they're all been done suo moto, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But it's very also clear, like from the many other folks that I'd spoken to in this, I had quoted in the story, that like the police themselves have told them that the orders have come from above. Now, I mean, in quite a few cases, it's, you know, apparently or allegedly by the CM himself. In this particular case, it seemed to be from the Congress MLA. On later, this thing, you know, I realized that this guy, the Congress MLA, had, like, you know, sort of rebelled. And he was among a bunch of, like, I think 8 or something MLAs who had all, like, you know, pledged their support to the BJP. You know,
this okay.
Like as like recently as January something, but however, and this was again like a whole technicality confusion because you know there was a whole sort of like a petition that was filed against them for their dismissal that you know you whatever you know the whole anti-defection law and everything kicking in, and their status basically was pretty much under question that they were still sitting on a Congress seat. Yet,
I see.
Like, yeah, of course, in letter and in spirit and in all other ways one can be essentially part of the BJP now, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, that was like the whole, I mean, there were many twists and turns to this particular, I think, instance.
All right. Okay, I think those are all the questions I have. Would you guys like to add anything else?
Yeah, Sigda,
yes,
right now, what do we have is tomorrow the quarantine period of the people inside the family of the first COVID patient ends tomorrow. So right now, what happens is they are preparing to sanitize the premises of the hospital. And interestingly, the sanitation team of the Shillong Municipal Board can be seen collecting garbage or what do you call them, these biochemical waste with just a pair of glove and a mask. Right now that is happening. So
okay, that is a very scary situation.
Yes.
So nobody, I mean, have you guys reported on it or are you going to?
Yes, we're going to report on it. It's just been a reporter has come up with this line. I mean, we do have snippets in our Facebook page. We usually put it there.
Okay. Thank you so much for telling us that. And this was a very enlightening conversation. Thank you so much, both of you.
Thank you.
And let us end with some recommendations.
All right.
I think really, I honestly, if you ask me, like, at least for COVID-19, like, it's a fast changing scenario. So there really isn't one recommendation that I can really give.
You can give multiple, and it doesn't always doesn't have to be about COVID. It could be a movie that you saw, a book you read, anything.
Yeah, you know what my thing has been, what my like both news and internet escape at this time has been, to just basically track what's happening in North Korea again, like, you know, that Kim has resurfaced. Is it really, you know? I've been going into this whole Kim obsession.
Basically. So my recommendation might interest you.
Yeah. Please share.
So it's basically an interview of this guy, of this author called Emmanuel Kim, who translated Friend, which is the first state-sanctioned North Korean novel to be published in English. Mm-hmm. And surprisingly, the novel is about love, marriage, and divorce.
So Sigda now comes to the line of what happened last night, like, you have to live with the virus.
Exactly.
You have to live with the virus.
It's like a bad marriage.
It is.
Wow. Yeah. That's,
so,
that's too real.
So, you know, because most of the fiction that comes from North Korea is always written by defectors or dissidents, right? But here, this is not the case. So, in the interview, the translator, this guy called Emmanuel, he talks about, you know, melodrama, propaganda, and what really qualifies as a bestseller in North Korea. And it is titled The First State Approved North Korean Novel in English. And you can read it on lithub.com. I'll send you guys the link.
Okay.
And so come on, tell me your recommendations.
My recommendation?
Yes.
Right now, I know we've been living with the virus, so we have to track that down every day. As a newspaper, we can't afford to miss out the numbers.
True.
And we can't afford to, miss out the zeros. Today, you know, I really have to count the zeros.
Really have to count the zeros. You know, the zeros is very tricky. That's true, though. I mean, you know, like, yeah, it's just when you're doing any. I mean, also considering that we are looking at this test per million, right? Like, that's how we
are. Yes. Yes, test per million. I mean, please, a test per million for me, you know, I have to get my exercise book and, you know, and start it off by writing those. Unit 10, 100,000.
Yeah, I know. Like,
that's,
I think,
confusing.
My math has really been put to shame, like, or rather, like, I've only just been reminded of the fact that, you know, how bad I am at it.
With math and science.
Yes. Science, so, I just don't even rely on myself. I'm like, okay, I'll be like, I'm quoting people. I have no analysis. I have no analytical, like, cells as far as this goes. So I'm like, okay. But math, I'm like, really, good Lord.
Yeah, it's the same case with me. So I was just recently the Telegraph front page today, you know. So yes. I was telling how I was counting the zeros in the headline because the economic package that you announced. And then I saw the subheading and it says, by the time you finish counting the zeros, hopefully Nirmala will give the details.
Yes, true. Yeah. But I mean, it's hard to say. I've been doing a mix of, like, you know, watching some stuff, like, you know, and all of that. Like I said, I've just been on, like, the North Korean binge, you know, so I'm watching, like, movies or I've been watching.
So tell us some movies that you've seen.
Actually, I could recommend, let me see if I can find it. There is this one nice documentary that was done by a bunch of French producers. And they'd spent, like, I think there were three of them, and then they'd cumulatively, like, had gone back and forth for about 8 years and stitched together this documentary.
Oh,
and I really liked it. I'll send you the link as well. Yeah. I really like that for the reasons that, you know, as you said, that there is that we also have to be very careful of the fact that there's perception around North Korea that's been built largely by a very hostile Western media, right?
True.
As it used to be with Middle East, until you've had like a lot of these other channels like Al Jazeera and everything who've come in, and like now a lot of that narrative has changed and since then, right? In fact, the Western media, your CNNs and your WSJs and New York Times have also, like, now had to keep pace, not to mention also hire, reporters also from the region as well, and all of that, who are more abreast with things. So this particular documentary, they just sort of, like, you know, have, I mean, again, like, because, you know, they've it's completely with the permission of the government, they've all come in as tourists and things like that, and they're just shooting, like, you know, like regular life, like their buildings and things like that, and, you know, whatever, like everything that is within the ambit of what is permitted to be, you know, so nothing like, you know, so like incriminating as so, like, kind of hankering for, at least when it comes to North Korea, but just the, I think the storytelling and through those images, what they show is just quite, I think it gives you quite a good insight into what the place is like. And, like, I mean, like any other place, it's a parallel reality, you know. I think there are several parallel realities. We don't have to, like, I think in many ways it did kind of question for me, like, what would you consider normal? Like, isn't the idea of normal again being set by a certain, like, global superpower? So if you don't have a McDonald's in your country, that means something is very off with your country. You know, that sort of a notion as well to be dispelled. So I think, to me, I would kind of recommend that, you know, at least, I mean, that has been my, like, kind
are of... this is called visiting North Korea, right? The DW...
DW one.
Yes. But, I think I saw a bit of it. I haven't completed it.
Yeah, DW has a bunch of them. This one, I think, yeah, the one that I'm referring to is Life in North Korea. Yeah, that's the one.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Make Peace. And Ri, you didn't give us your recommendation.
I I've been watching a lot of, you know, events happening every day. So
you don't have time.
I don't have time. You know, I've been busy coordinating with my reporters from home.
I can imagine.
You can recommend something from like Riverdale as well. Like, so what? Like, like, you don't have to be like so serious and like, you know, oh no.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
No one's like reading Sartre or something like in the midst of this.
In the midst of this pandemic with reports and all, you know, I recently found this this app, you know, called Star Maker.
Okay.
Star Maker. I'm having fun with this, you know.
What is Star Maker? Like, what is this app about?
This app is about singing, please.
Oh, that's so interesting. It's like karaoke.
It's like karaoke. So you sing your heart out and you
work. Oh, wow, Ri, next time you come and report us, we'll have you sing that.
You know, I do that because I work till late at night. I sleep at 2-3 in the morning. So I don't have time to even watch movies also.
I can imagine. So we'll tell people to download this app and show us their karaoke singing skills.
Good refuge.
All right. Okay then. Thank you so much, guys. So listeners, if you liked what you heard, please rate our podcast on iTunes or whatever platform you tuned into. We also have a bunch of other podcasts like Hafta and Awful and Awesome. Better the rating, more the reach, and that means more subscribers, and that in turn means better content. And also, we're very eager to hear your feedback, so do write to us at contact@newslaundry.com with Reporters Without Orders in the subject line. You can also leave your comments on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. And with that, this podcast is adjourned.
All the News Laundry podcasts are available on Stitcher, iTunes, and any other podcast platform.
Please subscribe to News Laundry. Help us keep news independent. To catch all our podcasts on news, pop culture, current affairs and sport, visit newslaundry.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. And subscribe to our YouTube channel.